We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And now New Galaxy Broadcasting presents Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition, a program addressing the grave challenges to human and citizen rights in America and the rest of the world. How can we, the people of Earth, take back the power and privileges granted to us by God and address so significantly in the Declaration of Independence? Our rights are inalienable, that is, given by God and incapable of being taken away from or given by another. These rights are the basis of liberty, the foundation of all life and happiness. The Coalition of Planetary Empowerment is an organization designed to give its members tools and information to empower them personally, in relationships and in business and employment, but also to give them a voice and the ability to help transform political and corporate governance to support the true needs and desires of people throughout the world. Inalienable and Free focuses on the need for government and corporate business interests to be responsive to the will and desire of their constituents and consumer shareholders. Welcome to Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition. My name is Johnny Bluestar, and I'm joined by my colleague and co-host, Hugo Rodier, an integrative physician concerned about the health of the world, as well as the health and well-being of his patients. Inalienable and Free reports on the condition of human and citizen rights throughout the world, with a focus on ways to maintain, recoup, and expand these sacred rights. We both believe that the answer lies in solutions that are in harmony with true conscience and a clear consciousness that lies beyond the selfish focus of many who now enjoy political and corporate power in the world. Another really insane and volatile week, particularly in the area of government policies, Hugo. What do you think? What do you make of it?
Well, more of the things we're seeing pointing towards a big, big underlying society problem. And if you have time, maybe we can talk about springing a leak on medical terms and maybe staff turmoil at the White House.
Well, you know, some of the things that I'm thinking of are, the situation with DACA, with Syria, the militarization of the borders, Israel, and tariffs. Those are some of the topics I see, and I'm constantly amazed. I'd like to play you something about DACA, okay? This is what Lisa Desjardins has to say about Trump's tweets about DACA and migrant caravans in context.
President Trump capped off his two-day barrage of immigration-related tweets by declaring today DACA is dead. Lisa Desjardins puts the president's long-shifting stance on immigration policy in context.
Let's start with the latest from President Trump today at what is usually a non-political event.
Thank you all for being here, folks.
The annual White House Easter egg roll. The president was asked about his tweets on immigration.
It's a shame, and now people are taking advantage of DACA, and that's a shame.
This after a weekend flood of similar Trump tweets. Why now? Well, it may be a response to a Fox News segment.
A caravan of migrants, at least 1,200 strong, marching across Mexico toward the United States.
Shortly after that aired, Mr. Trump declared, Border Patrol agents are not allowed to properly do their job at the border because of ridiculous liberal Democrat laws like catch and release, getting more dangerous, caravans coming. Let's dissect that. Catch and release is the policy of releasing undocumented immigrants while they wait for a hearing with an immigration judge. A smaller point here, it is not a law, it is a policy. A larger point, about a year ago, then Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly said this.
We have ended catch and release.
This weekend's tweets add to confusion over whether the program has ended. Second, Mr. Trump mentions caravans coming. This refers to a group of at least 1,200 Central American migrants, many making their way to the U.S. border. They reportedly plan to ask for asylum or consider crossing illegally. The group says this has been a regular event for years. Another tweet and another question. The big flows of people are all trying to take advantage of DACA, Trump said. There is a factual problem there. Since President Obama created the DACA program, it has been limited to only those who were brought into the United States illegally by the year 2007. So bottom line, any child brought into the U.S. illegally now or in the past few years cannot qualify for DACA. This brings us to politics. DACA is dead, the president tweeted this morning, because Democrats didn't care or act. Here, the president is ignoring that 14 Republicans, not just Democrats, voted against his DACA plan in February.
The yeas are 39, the nays are 60.
And of course, there is this fact.
Good morning.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions and the Trump administration shut down DACA, arguing it is illegal. Opinions aside, in the most literal sense, DACA is dead because President Trump ended it. There is truth to one element here. Trump is hitting a very real nerve when he blames Democrats for DACA.
Stop holding these young people hostage. Do the will, thank you. Stop holding them as your political pawns.
Democrats vowed to protect DACA recipients, but the three-day government shutdown over the issue in January backfired for them. That failure has angered Democrats' base and Hispanics. So where does this leave DACA? There are many tweets, but there are currently no talks about a possible DACA deal. There haven't been for over a month. That has left some 800,000 DACA recipients still in limbo, looking not to Congress or to the president, but to the other branch of government, the courts, which could rule sometime this year. And by the way, they generally do not tweet.
So what do you think about this? He loves the DACA people and then throws them onto the mercy of Congress. And now Congress doesn't do anything. And now he wants to cancel DACA. What does this all mean, Hugo?
Well, I just think it reflects the president's personality. It's so sad to be playing with people's feelings like that, which is what it amounts to. And it's so indelicate, so insensitive. It's stunning.
Well, this thing particularly that's stunning also is what Lisa mentioned in this audio that we were listening to. And that is that he was listening to Fox News and they mentioned migrant caravans coming towards the United States border. And so it's coming. And he says, well, you know, they're trying to sort of weasel into DACA. But DACA has nothing to do with those people because they didn't come here as young people by their and taken in by their parents. And they have nothing to do with DACA. That seems like a rather big thing to leave out, don't you think?
Well, it goes to show you the level of competency and knowledge of this president. The paper today had a great cartoon of the three branches of government. And then they list the legislative, judiciary, and then it shows the White House with Trump on the roof watching TV. So the third branch is Fox and Friends. And describes it pretty well.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. Well, you've got a bunch of DACA people who can stay for a little bit of time. The count is now like there are 693,850 immigrants who have DACA status, and 200,000 of those in California. And, you know about the debate about the sanctuary state, and California is taking a pretty strong position. Not every city in California is agreeing with the state, but they're trying to hold out for protecting people like this.
The sanctuary cities, yes, uh-huh.
It's just, I think it's important to do your best as a, you know, if you're a governor, or you're a mayor in a municipality, to really focus on whatever your power is when such arbitrary and unfair ways of treating people are common. And, you know, it's very obvious that Trump likes to play several different cards at once. And so he's playing the DACA card pro and the DACA card against. So I guess he thinks he just gets a lot of support from his base. And then on the other hand, he completely gets support from the Democrats and all the other people who really do love the DACAs. So,
well, my guess is when he was all friendly and touched by the DACA people and wanted to help, I think he probably got a lot of phone calls from his base saying, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? So he went back to his discriminatory, condescending policies that won him the election.
Yeah, I think that's what he clings to. Well, here's I want to play for you a clip from a CBS report on the Mexican border.
President Trump says he wants to use the military to secure the border with Mexico until the U.S. can build a wall there. The president said he is studying border security options with Defense Secretary James Mattis. One option is to send National Guard troops to help Border Patrol. Chip Reed is at the White House with the latest. Chip, good morning.
Well, good morning. The president is stepping up the tough talk on illegal immigration after making little progress on his signature campaign promise to build a border wall. The White House says the president has directed a vigorous administrative strategy to confront the threat.
Until we can have a wall and proper security, we're going to be guarding our border with the military.
At a meeting with Baltic leaders Tuesday, President Trump called for sending troops to the southern border to stop illegal immigration, but provided little detail.
I think that it's something we have to do.
Mr. Trump seized on reports of a caravan of over 1,000 migrants who have been dispersing in Oaxaca, Mexico. According to the Mexican government, the caravan has taken place every year at this time since 2010.
Thought they were going to just walk right through Mexico and right through the border.
While presidents have in the past sent the National Guard to the border to assist Customs and Border Patrol, they did not act as law enforcement personnel. In 2010, President Obama sent 1,200 National Guard members to help battle drug smuggling and illegal immigration. And in 2006, President Bush sent 6,000 Guard members to assist the Border Patrol. In both deployments, soldiers had no authority to detain immigrants because federal law prohibits using active duty troops to conduct law enforcement activities in the United States unless authorized by Congress. President Trump's call to militarize the border comes as illegal border crossings last year were at the lowest levels since 1971.
There's nothing that I see right now happening on the U.S.-Mexico border that would constitute an insurrection.
Admiral James Winnefeld was vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under President Obama and warns against using the U.S. military.
If the president tried to use military forces in an inappropriate way, he would be violating federal law.
The National Guard says it has not received any notice about sending troops to the border, and in a statement, the Mexican government says its immigration policy is, quote, a sovereign issue implemented according to law. John?
Chip Reed for us at the White House. Thank you, Chip.
You know, in addition to what we just heard, Trump has also tweeted that Mexico needs to stop border traffic or he will stop NAFTA. After all that, so now he's trying to get everything he wants. He's trying to trade the DACA people for the border wall. He's going to sort of threaten to bring in all these people, which he has. He did this one fast, Hugo. He got them over there. They're already going to the border. They're not really the Army or the Navy. They are the National Guard. I guess that's military enough, right?
Yes. Well, you know, it's probably a good thing to split the issues here. On the one hand, other presidents have sent the National Guard and the military to the border. Obama and Bush did.
Yeah.
So I don't see that as a terrible thing. What's troubling is all the mixing and matching of all these issues. It just shows such incompetency. I'm sorry. I just don't see another word for it.
You see, I actually agree with you a lot. I would even more say that if there is a real border problem, yes, I think that it is legitimate to have the military guard the border.
Sure.
I don't know if there really is. You know, some people are saying that we don't have anywhere near the necessity for a military, for people there in terms of guarding the border, because a lot of the people who actually are here illegally and get in illegally are people who have somehow gotten here already, and they're you know, the people who are going to be deported, they're waiting in, you know, to see, you know, in courts, or they're hiding out here, or they're waiting for it to see if ISIS will pick them up. So it's not really supposedly not so much of a gigantic problem of people crossing the border, but I do believe that a lot of people who do cross the border are, you know, part of drug cartels and things like that. And I don't care if there's some military is there. That's fine with me if they're needed.
Yeah, it's hard to say what the true figures are like. I think this whole thing about sending troops is more of a gesture. to show that he really means it and he's tough. You know, let me show you my toys, and very much a stance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not troubled by it. You know, just while we're talking about this on DACA, I got to throw this in. Mm-hmm. I agree with Romney. You know, he's getting beat up in Utah for saying that this DACA kids should have a system of earning points to where they end up becoming citizens. And I immigrated from Chile as a student, so it wasn't illegal. And then I had to work really hard to become a citizen, which I wanted desperately for many reasons. But the point being is that I had to work. I had to earn it. And, you know, I know that a lot of immigrants just don't want to learn the language, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? A young kid who comes here illegally for no fault of their own, I get that, no fault of their own, still, what's wrong with saying, look, check this list here and we'll make you a citizen. If you do this, you get certain points. If you go to the military, certain points. If you go to college and graduate, certain points. If you screw up and end up in jail, minus points. Hey, what's wrong with that?
I don't think anything's wrong with it. Except for the fact that many of these kids have already done what is necessary. They speak the language, they've gone to school, they've graduated, okay. They have good jobs. And they should get
a bunch of points.
Yeah, they should get a bunch of points. But if they haven't done those things, I can see the logic behind that.
Right.
You know, the thing is, we're always talking about the pillar, you know, the two pillars between severity and compassion. And I think that there are some things, like guarding the border by the military, that may be necessary. I don't look at those things as being, I look at them as contextual in terms of reality, not in terms of just like some people will say, well, the military shouldn't be, you know, acting in instead of the police domestically. I agree with that, but I think the border is a different situation because you know what I mean? I don't buy that story that just because they're the military, they shouldn't be there. I think that's more the reason they should be there. If needed.
That's my point. You know, we need to divide these things, you know, so there's a lot getting mixed here as one thing,
mm-hmm.
as Trump does, when it's many different issues.
Well, the thing that really is disturbing is this thing about, he's saying Mexico needs to stop border traffic or it'll stop NAFTA.
Yeah.
That's like a very spontaneous kind of BS type of thing. NAFTA is a very complicated thing to perhaps adjust. It needs to be adjusted, and maybe it needs to be dumped. But the thing is, just to say that, you know, I don't think that there's been any gigantic new border. It seems like the border traffic has decreased, if anything else.
Sure. Well, this kind of connecting all these, oh, you stole my sandwich. Well, I'm going to tell my mommy. Or, you know, that's what it strikes me. You know, it's like saying, oh, okay, NAFTA's not working. Well, then we're not going to play soccer with you anymore. Our soccer teams will not play your Mexico teams. That's where it can lead, you know, if you extrapolate.
Oh, does that sound a little bit like Russia these days?
Yeah.
Tit for tat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there is a certain thing about Trump, which is that he loves to punish people. He loves to humiliate them. And then he kind of becomes their friend again because he's got wealth and power, and so they put up with it. And maybe he throws them a bone like he did Carson, you know, he'll throw them a position. But there's that always sort of secret kind of desire to hurt and to kill. So
I agree.
I'm not happy about that part at all.
Well, this was so evident. The first time I saw him shake hands with people, it's just infantile. He shakes hands and jerks them towards him. That is just total desire to control and humiliate.
Yeah. Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to take a little break here for just a few minutes and play some important messages, so to speak, as they say in radio. And we'll be right back.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
Boots in Manhattan is a coming-of-age novel by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. It is about a young Tom Boots Raymond who grows up in New York in the 1940s, who was a member of a street gang.
My friends and I were about to start our own game of stickball when Rabbit Lacey, the head of the Rattlers, came up to us and tried to move in on our game. We were called dwarves, the youngest members of this stupid gang.
Hey, Kevin, I need you to get some gloves and some stuff I left at my place.
No, this is our game.
Hey, are you my good little dwarf or what?
You've been calling me a dwarf since I was six. We're not your personal slaves, pal.
Hey, what is this? A dwarf rebellion? All right, big guy, we ditched the dwarf thing. We make you guys regular rattlers.
No, it's too late.
He looked at Jay and me. We looked away. Rabbit was now angry, and he pushed Kevin hard with the palms of his hand. Kevin tried to ram him in the stomach, but he stepped aside, throwing Kevin into the curb where he fell to the ground, bleeding profusely at the knee. Still, he managed to get up.
My street.
Kevin shouted at Rabbit, pointing at him with an angry index finger.
Find out more by Googling Boots in Manhattan, a 1940s coming-of-age novel, part one of the novel series The Foot Soldier by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle. That's Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle.
Patty Greer journeyed to England to check out crop circles, eventually chronicling this phenomena in film and serving as a kind of intermediary between its creators and humanity on the brink of global disaster. Hear her Threshold radio show, Crop Circle Mysteries, and another show celebrating the premiere of her film, Crop Circle Diaries. Find them in our ThresholdRadio.com archives as well as our SoundCloud and YouTube channel. What I want to say here is that tweets can be faster than the speed of light. That may be why the American people are sometimes so far ahead of the supposed government departments they represent. But let's take a look at Syria for a second. Let me play this from Al Jazeera.
And to complicate matters even further, the U.S. Commander-in-Chief had this to say.
And by the way, we're knocking the hell out of ISIS. We'll be coming out of Syria, like, very soon. Let the other people take care of it now. Very soon. Very soon, we're coming out.
That boast goes against what American commanders have been saying all along, that the U.S. will remain in the northeastern part of Syria for now to prevent the resurgence of ISIL. Trump caught even the State Department off guard.
I can't comment on what the president supposedly said. I haven't seen it. I'd have to refer you back to the White House.
He didn't supposedly say it.
Well, I have not seen it myself.
He said it.
I have not seen that myself.
Okay.
You don't necessarily comment or report on things that have been heard secondhand, and I'm not going to do that either.
That's fine. So you're not aware of any policy determination to pull the U.S. out of Syria?
I am not. No. No.
The U.S. presence in Syria gives it a stake at the negotiating table, as long as troops maintain their presence in the Kurdish areas. The war in Syria is now entering a phase where Russia, Turkey, and Iran are in the process of bartering for their strategic interests. The Kurdish YPG currently controls around 20% of territory in Syria, the second highest area of land after President Bashar al-Assad and his forces. Turkey wants that to change, and it's anyone's guess how it will all play out. Stephanie Decker, Al Jazeera.
Isn't that wonderful? What he's going back to his original campaign promises. He doesn't want people to be, you know, us to involve ourselves in very complex and dangerous things for our troops. And he wants to look at things. He thinks that we've already won the war against ISIS. And boom, they're going to be out of there. Isn't that great? Except
That's not what he did. He changed his mind the next day or so.
Well, you know, on the one hand, it's good to be flexible. It's good to be open to new input and be nimble on your feet and et cetera. But this thing has been festering for such a long time that you think he'd have grasp of the situation to not incur, not get into these whiplash decisions. One has to wonder if he's heard something new, but I kind of doubt it, I think.
Well, the thing is, even if he has heard something new, he's getting up in front of an audience of, you know, sort of followers, and he's being real casual in a way. But he needs to talk to the Secretary of Defense, and he needs to talk to the various, you know, various military and security advisors he has before he opens his mouth. You just don't do that. This is not the same as some of these other issues where he shouldn't be spontaneous, but it doesn't matter so much. But this matters a great deal because it sends a signal to a lot of people, good people and bad people throughout the whole world. Some people who will act immediately and take advantage of it in one way or another.
Well, it's total insensitivity and disregard for what other people might be thinking around him. In fact, the other day, picked up the notes he had in front of him and threw it away with contempt.
Yeah, I saw that.
And you know, he got a laugh out of that, and I thought it was funny too. But it reflects such a disregard for counsel.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, you're not supposed to. I realize that we've discussed this before. The idea of Congress declaring war has been watered down to a great degree. In other words, with the War Powers Act, a president can do a lot for a very long period of time because war doesn't take long to kill a lot of people and to take land and or be defeated. And the War Powers Act, I think, has really diluted the original intention. But this, you know, like the actual bombing of the Syrian airbase, right before the UN was going to discuss it, like the next day. This is really, really strange stuff. And it was not very well verified, and many people still think that it was never verified. And the United Nations basically was blocked about investigating it because it already happened, and it still didn't really, a real investigation I don't think has ever taken place, has it?
No, I don't think so.
Well, so it's like very, very strange. And then I want to play this, Hugo, because this is kind of directly related to what I think is a gigantic pattern here. I'm going to play something about what happened in terms of the English spy who was and his daughter who were poisoned, so to speak. You know that right now a lot of people are questioning whether or not all these people all these countries have sent back their diplomats, and people are beginning to question whether or not there was any real evidence that Russia had done it.
Interesting. Well, not surprising. We talked about that, how we were jumping the gun and we had no concrete evidence at the time.
Almost everything that's been done with Russia has really failed to publicly link participants in the government with the various things that they've claimed to have done, like most of the stuff about the meddling with the elections. Most of it you have to take, you know, somebody's word for it. Now, it's true that there was a group, and I think this is true, there was a group of people who trolled stuff in Russia and came to the United States and did stuff here. But those people, in order to punish Russia for that, you really have to establish that connection. And the way that things work here is that very, very quickly, they punish Russia, and they kind of attack its reputation throughout the world, but they don't feel like proving it because a lot of the proof would be classified. And then the media just jumps in and talks about that.
Well, as I mentioned before, Johnny, I highly recommend that book, The Plot to Scapegoat Russia.
Yeah.
And I'm not a communist, but, you know, I just think that we got this thing about war. Hawks are in control now. And what's Russia guilty of? Well, I assure you, they're guilty of everything we've done ourselves.
Yes, that's right. They probably are.
Meddle in other people's elections.
I'm sorry, but I don't think that they can possibly hit the volume of it, though. In other words, they've probably done the same things, but I don't think they'll ever hit the volume.
Exactly. So we're condemning them, accusing them of what we, in a much greater magnitude, like you say. And so, yeah, okay, bang, you got them.
Well, the people who have influenced the elections have been the Democratic National Committee and and the Trump campaign with its use of Cambridge Analytica and Facebook. The actual number of thefts of people's profiles have moved up from, I think it was 300 million to 500 million just a couple of days ago.
Yeah. Okay.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Unbelievable. We do it all the time to ourselves. But if some Russian guy comes in and does it, oh my God, let's start World War III.
It's just amazing that the irony is that they're saying that Trump was involved in the Trump was involved with Russia in concert with Russia manipulating things. And the fact is that Steve Bannon was actually a director of Cambridge Analytica before it was taken up by the Trump campaign. So Trump is responsible for meddling with the elections. And of course, Hillary Clinton is too. And probably destroyed the chances for Bernie Sanders.
It's the way business is done in the world now. So we do it ourselves and expect other people not to do it. And not to say that it's right. You know, that's another discussion. And this whole Ukraine business, it's just disgusting. You know, Ukraine is just about as Russian as it can get. It's like finding fault with the Tennessee people, Daniel Boone and all those guys invading Texas and taking over. Why did they do it? Because most Texans were Americans. At least that's what we're told. And so I'd say leave them alone.
Well, they've armed them. That's another thing that just happened fairly recently. It's been announced now fairly recently. So we've armed them. We're surrounding Russia with a lot of very dangerous equipment and possibly things capable of nuclearization. And now we're right near Russia too, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we got military bases surrounding them, like you say. We got aircraft carriers pointing guns at them. Then we tell them that we're going to make our atomic bombs more potent. What are they going to do?
Well, and also we're in North Korea, right near them.
Right.
We've got Trident submarines that each one can kill 140 million people with their various missiles. And they're, China and Russia are in range of those things. Now, if something happened and we did it, we'd probably very quickly destroy the planet. Because both those countries have nuclear weapons too. But now, you know, Putin is saying, okay, well, we've got stuff that can evade your ballistic missile capacities, and so you're not going to be able to protect yourself. So I think that the arms race is really on now, and Trump, I'm not saying that it didn't start before this, because it's maybe started a while ago when Putin says we retreated.
But the most critical thing here is that we stop communicating, just like kindergarten people. Oh, let's just our diplomats. So there we go. Now we have no way to talk, and so things can't escalate and go sour pretty quickly because we stopped communicating. So I don't care what countries do. I think we should always try to not stop talking like adults.
Wow, that is so true. So what we're doing is just we're putting people in the corner and punishing them without even knowing if they've done anything.
Right.
And it's just the media is cooperating. You know, I want to give a little bit of a plug for The Real News. Because The Real News, which is a program, it's a sort of a news network that's alternative media, really seems to be looking at the very important things and really getting into them in depth. Well, I think that we should also talk about a really sad thing, which is the Gaza investigation. I would like to play this first.
It's The Real News Network. I'm Sharmini Peres coming to you from Baltimore. At an emergency meeting of the United Nations Security Council on Friday, the Trump administration blocked a vote calling for an international investigation into Israeli Defense Forces killing 17 and wounding 1,500 Palestinians last Friday. The government of Kuwait had proposed the resolution. The killings took place in the context of a massive peaceful march of Palestinians near the Gaza Strip's eastern border. They called for a return of expropriated land and commemorated the killing of six Palestinians at a demonstration in 1976. Here's what Taib Brook Zehoun of the United Nations, he's the assistant to the Secretary General for Political Affairs, had to say.
There is fear that the situation might deteriorate in the coming days. We will continue to underline that it is imperative that civilians, in particular children, not be targeted and that all actors refrain from putting children at risk at any time. Israel must uphold its responsibilities under international human rights and humanitarian law. Lethal force should only be used as a last resort, with any resulting fatalities properly investigated by the authorities.
The Pope at his Easter service on Sunday in Rome had this to say about the violence.
Frutti di riconciliazione.
We beseech fruits of reconciliation for the Holy Land, also experiencing in these days the wounds of ongoing conflict that do not spare the defenseless. For Yemen and for the entire Middle East, so that dialogue and mutual respect may prevail over division and violence.
After taking life of so many Palestinians, Israeli military tweeted, "We know where every bullet landed," implying that the killings were intentional and targeted. The tweet had been deleted shortly after it appeared.
You know, a bunch of people have been killed at Gaza. I think I heard initially it was like 17 people and 15, I think it was 1,500 people had been wounded by what the Israelis did after this so-called peaceful protest, which I think it must have been. Certainly, they just had snipers sitting up there picking people off. And then they actually made an announcement like that. I don't know if the announcement is valid or not, but they took it down. But they said that they knew where every bullet went. Whether they knew or they didn't know, they sure hurt a lot of people. And they sure have created a magnificent violation of people's right to peacefully protest. And guess what? When people ask the United Nations for a investigation, we vetoed it.
Terrible. You know, I just don't see why we can't just take a piece of land and give it to these people. We did it for Israel. Why can't we do it for the other side, you know?
Well, actually, I think what happened is that Great Britain did it for Israel and the Palestinians fairly simultaneously. So I think the way this whole thing went down really was really bad at the very beginning. And of course, the Arabs and the Israelis fought, and the Israelis won. But they also fought against the British. And they also did some pretty terrible things back then to both the British, like blowing up a hotel, and the way they really hurt a lot of the and killed a lot of Palestinian people who were trying to fight for their what they believe was their homeland. It's a pretty sad story, but I think that us blocking things like this, I think that's terrible. And then look at what we did when Israel moved to Jerusalem. Look how we just ignored the Security Council's various resolutions about the illegality of what we did, and then we're actually going after the people and who disagreed with us and threatening to take away their funding. Pretty amazing stuff.
It's not making too many friends out there.
I don't know. It's just that's what I say. This has been a really strange week. So let's go into one other aspect of this week, and that is the new tariffs. Let me just play this little piece from Morning Joe.
And it all. And this, the Trump administration on proposed 25% tariffs on $50 billion in Chinese imports, mainly tech equipment. Among more than 1,300 products are flat screen TVs, medical devices, aircraft parts.
Hold on, let's just go through this. So if you're at home, Donald Trump, because of a very, he's had this twitch for about 40 years. A twitch born of ignorance.
Yeah.
The cost of your flat screen TVs are going up. Mm. The cost of your medical devices are going up. Aircraft parts will go up. So
batteries.
The cost of flying on airplanes will go up. The cost of batteries will go up. The cost of pork will go up. The cost, you name it, go across the board. Donald Trump and the Trump tariff tax is going to impact you and going to impact your family
it's
when you
the
go
TTT.
When you go to Walmart, when you go to Target, when you go to the grocery store, it's going to impact you all across the board.
And yeah. Can we just point out the first item in that list, soybeans?
Yeah.
That really hits a lot of states that Donald Trump won. It hits families like mine. I mean, it really, this is not what the American agriculture sector needs right now.
And Mika, farmers in Iowa are getting pounded by this trade war.
Well, yesterday, China said it is only polite to retaliate. And within the last few hours, China announced 25% tariffs on $50 billion worth of American exports, including soybeans, airplanes, and autos. Yesterday, the president said he thinks the U.S. and China are in a good place.
China, I have great respect for President Xi. Two of the most incredible days of my life were spent in China. Many of you were with me. He's a tremendous person. But we have a problem with China. They've created a trade deficit, and I really blame our representatives and, frankly, our preceding presidents for this. So we'll be working with China. We'll be negotiating with China. Again, our relationship is very good with China, and we intend to keep it that way.
So what do you think about the trade war possibility, or is it already happening?
On the one hand, it's good to get China's attention that we'd like trade to be a little different, but to start tariffs, we know where that goes. Historically, we've shown that it doesn't work. And proof of the pudding is that we're seeing here escalation of threats to tariff ourselves to death on both sides. And who loses? The public.
Well, I just think this is a matter of careful negotiation. We seem to have been doing better with China than ever before because of North Korea. And I think there was a sense of rapport, I think probably real, to some extent between Xi and Trump, and also Xi and Putin, incidentally. It's just, why can't they just get along? I mean, it isn't so difficult to figure out if your mindset is in the right place, which is the difference between being competitive with the whole world and being cooperative with the whole world. I think that's the critical element that's missing.
Well, it's like you said at the beginning, Trump likes to control, intimidate, humiliate, and punish people, and then go to the table to talk after jerking them with a handshake, if you will, putting them off balance. But you know, it's so foolhardy to do this to a country that holds a big chunk of our national debt.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. A huge chunk of it. And it's a country that is backing, I believe already they've started to back the yuan with gold. Now, I think that's more or less still on an experimental level, but they actually have done it to an extent. Russia's also doing the same thing.
Right. They're hoarding gold. You know what's coming. They just don't want to back up the dollar anymore. Why would they?
Exactly. I mean, it's just like the Security Council with the favoring of certain countries, mostly nuclear. I mean, they favor these countries because they're powerful, not because they're right. And we got a sweet deal about having, you know, the petrodollars. But now it's time to realize that this is a world that where all men are created equal and all countries should be considered equal in certain ways. Certainly not just because they have military might.
You know, I'm so glad you brought up the petrodollar. That has made our lifestyle, our way of life in America, what it is. But you know what? It's been one huge, gigantic bubble, and we need to be ready. You know, I have told myself intuitively through the years, just facetiously speaking, I would be totally glad, Johnny, to trade my car for my bike, pedal around, if you guaranteed me that there would be no more wars and no more inequality in the world. And you know what? In my old age, I ride my bike to work, back and forth. And you know, I know most people could not do that, but I tell you, it's coming. It's going to be a tremendous dislocation of economic issues to where we need to start tightening our belts.
Well, we're also the hybrid type of vehicles are getting much more extensive and much more sophisticated, I think.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, there has to be some big changes. Before we go into the health corner today, I just like to mention one other thing. And this is from CBS News. It's actually an article. I'm not going to read it, but I'll just review a few sentences here and there. Homeland Security compiles a database of journalists and media influencers. And this is what it says. The Department of Homeland Security posted a contract request this week for, quote, media monitoring services, which will compile a database of hundreds of thousands of journalists, bloggers, and media influencers for the federal government. After an outcry on social media, Department of Homeland Security spokesman tweeted, "This is nothing more than the standard practice of monitoring current events in the media." The DHS spokesman, Tyler Holton, tweeted, it says, "Despite what some reporters may suggest, this is standard. Any suggestion otherwise is fit for tinfoil hat wearing black helicopter conspiracy theorists." I mean, this it's just a complete violation of this kind of surveillance, which is, of course, a companion to all the other kinds of surveillance, is so transparent in its attempts to quash free speech. Have you noticed the stuff about Sinclair Broadcasting?
Oh, it's awful. It's just awful. You know, echoes of Pravda, you know, the Russian paper, the truth, Pravda. Really? No, it was all government news. You know, I will never say the Russians are saints. I'm just saying the tea kettle on the pot, you know?
Yeah, I mean, but it's like a little tea kettle on a very big pot or vice versa because, I mean, our invasiveness with other countries has been documented. It's not like anybody doesn't really know about it. Our interference in other elections and so forth. It's not just one thing that happened, which is why I like John Perkins' books.
I've read all his books. I think he's right on the money.
Yeah, he is really, the thing that I like about Hoodwinked, which I'm almost finished with, is that at the end of it, it's about what happened in the 2008 thing. It brings in the other aspects of the economic hitman thing that's happened. But it focuses particularly on that. But he brings in solutions.
Yes, he does. Yes.
And I particularly, in what we're trying to put together, the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment, we have a division which will allow people to focus on corporate malfeasance through various methods. But one of them would be shareholders voting and also lobbying and boycott, possibly leading to more sterner measures that consumers might take about corporate malfeasance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a very important point. And a lot is going on right now, but there's no center of it. And the average person doesn't know anything about the actual official efforts of people to rein in these corporations. But, you know, like he would say, and I know this because I've talked to him, you know, he thinks that the corporations are the key. And I know in a certain sense they are, but their power, a lot depends on the elected officials who control the government. So it's kind of you have to really stop some of this, you have to go after a lot of things. The government, the corporate regimes, and the media. That's a pawn also of these corporations and the political entities.
Well, in my opinion, if that's the way it is, the best way is to empower the consumer, keyword consumer. Because I've seen a lot of changes just by people voting with their pocketbook.
Yes, I think that's the most powerful way.
Right. So we've seen labeling of GMO foods. We've seen less consumption of sugar, less tobacco, et cetera, because consumers, being enlightened, hopefully with shows like this one, will say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to play this anymore. I'm going to buy this instead of that. I'm going to defer book because they're losing my data, et cetera, et cetera. That's how we'll get it done.
Yeah, and we should give a little homage to Ralph Nader in auto safety. Well, I should really beg you to start the Health Corner discussion today.
Well, thank you, Johnny. Today we're going to talk about not taking a leak. Well, I should say not springing a leak. I just want to get your attention. A terrific article came out, and I blogged about it, so you can look it up on my website, hugorodia.com. But the article that I highlighted is about the interstitium. That's just a fancy word for the lining of organs. So think of the lining of the gut inside, the lining of the brain, the lining of the arteries. Every major organ has an interstitium, which is just a lining, bunch of cells, membranes. Well, it's very delicate, and it can get toxic, oxidized, inflamed, and lacking in mitochondrial function, so it can toil, T-O-I-L. When it does, it becomes leaky. And so if tissues are leaky, we're in a whole lot of trouble. Now, most people are familiar with this already because they've heard of leaky gut.
Right.
I'm going to tell you, there's also leaky brain. That's why we've got so much Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, because as these tissues become leaky, they don't communicate with other organs well, and they take in a lot of toxins in the environment. And so the one that I also want to highlight, and I'll shut up, is leaky arteries. Well, Johnny, guess what goes up naturally to patch up your leaky arteries?
What goes up
cholesterol,
naturally?
But we've demonized cholesterol.
Which we demonized for quite some time.
Exactly. When cholesterol is trying to do its job to patch up a leaky artery, and it gets demonized, but that's what God intended, to patch up leaky arteries. Instead, we give you drugs instead of saying, let's stop the toxicity, the inflammation, the oxidation, and the lack of optimal mitochondrial function with a good diet full of nutrients that will patch up leaky arteries, leaky brains, and leaky gut, and leaky everything. If you don't get this, your craft will sink.
Well, could you explain how this cholesterol demonization occurred and what they did and why it's beginning to change? Like what actually happened?
I think you know the answer to this already, but it harkens back to the New York Times making it very clear that cholesterol is demonized to sell more drugs, all right, to sell the statin drugs, because we had hardly any evidence except for what the pharmaceutical produced that cholesterol was harmful. Of course, you know, if you do an autopsy on a cadaver and you see the coronaries full of plaque, and then you study the plaque and see that cholesterol is a big part of it, oh, there it is, the smoking gun. No, sir. The cholesterol went up to patch up leaky arteries but could not do it well. The job was botched because you were not eating your veggies. So you could not truly patch up leaky arteries, and cholesterol overwhelmingly took over the process, but not doing it well because the cholesterol itself was inflamed and oxidized, coming from a liver that's already inflamed and oxidized and leaky.
Oh, I see.
So though these things are pretty simple once you catch on, which is what we're trying to do with our politics too, aren't we?
Yes. I have a question, though, about diet in general. Given the considerations of nutrition, do you think that there is any kind of general ratio that should be between, say, vegetables and fruits and different kinds of carbohydrates, you know, more high glycemic carbohydrates, things like rice and sugar. Is there some kind of just general picture of what it should be like? Should be eating more fruit, should be eating more vegetables, and so forth?
Well, in a nutshell, and nuts are really good too, it's veggies first and a bit of fruit. But Dr. Jenkins, who got demonized 30 years ago for talking about the glycemic index answer this question real well. So look up glycemic index and you will see exactly the content of sugar of each food.
Yeah.
All food, even meat, has sugar. So the answer is pretty clear. Tank up on nuts, veggies, and lean meats if you don't want to be vegetarian. Then you got to eat fruits, legumes, and whole grains in moderation. And the ratio you look for between those two groups is 80-20. 80-20. 80% veggies, lean meats, and nuts. 20% whole grains, legumes, and fruit.
What is the ratio between the nuts and meat and the actual veggies? What do you think there should be? Is there a ratio there?
Between those three?
No, between the two. Well, I guess.
Yeah, between those three, I think it's another 80-20, where you want to do 80% nuts and veggies and 20% lean meats. But the best is being vegetarian. I don't push that very much because most people don't want to be vegetarian. They're not psychologically ready to be vegetarians. So this is a good start. I eat meat only when I go out and there's nothing else. You know, I'll order chicken here and there, but I don't bring it home. And fish, of course, you know, I also eat fish when I go out. And if you want to read more about that, it's the China study on the virtues of refraining from animal protein.
Well, I am not a vegetarian now. I was a vegetarian for 20 years, though, but I was the wrong kind of vegetarian. I was an overlactive vegetarian, and I had a lot of sugar, and I got very overweight, and eventually I got diabetic symptoms that were really overwhelming. It was a real painful journey to find out about the wrong kind of vegetarianism.
Yes, you know, I see that a lot. A lot of vegetarians compensate by eating a lot of sugar. That's why I say psychologically, I'd rather people ate lean meats and refrain from sugar.
Yeah. Well, I basically came to these conclusions myself, but it was a very painful process. And fortunately, you also intervened a little bit in my lack of knowledge a few years ago when I became your patient.
Well, you're still alive, so I haven't killed you. That's good.
That's right. Well, I guess this is about it. And I want to thank you for coming today and helping me with this. We're going to have some really interesting times in the near future because every day it's something else, isn't it?
Yeah, with plenty of material out there.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, and I'll see you next week.
All right. Thanks, Johnny.
Bye-bye. Thanks for joining Dr. Rodier and I on Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition. As we go about developing our new organization, the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment, we hope you will consider the importance of taking part in the electoral processes of your government and asserting the rights you have to vote for the companies you respect and love by casting your ballot as a shareholder or as a consumer with what you buy. We hope soon to make this possible through a social network responsive to your needs to dialogue about your rights as a citizen, but also to be able to effectively act in concert with like-minded colleagues to find representatives of government and business executives who will hear your voice and appreciate your message. See you soon.